duct, common hepatic duct, together they have united and they have, when they come up here at the porta hepatis, if you cut high up here, you know, when you took the liver out, you would see both. If you don't, then you will only see one duct, that is the common bile duct. Okay? And so the common bile duct came. Now you can see if there's a gallstone, where it can get stuck and how it can block the passage of bile and the pancreatic juice into the small intestine. And so here you can have, there are several places you can have the bile duct blocking. That means, you know, it can go into the gallbladder, it can stay here, it can go into the gallbladder, and or it can slip right down, it can slip right down, you know, through here, and it can come right, you know, through here. And when it comes here, look at it here. As you look at this one here, you can see this is a little bit narrow here, so it can kind of block, you know, the hepatopancreatic ampulla here, and it may stay there. And if it blocks, and the bile that is coming down here, what is going to happen to that bile that comes there? Where can it go? It can go only in two directions here. It can either go, some of it can go here, the other can go here also. It can also go here into the pancreas, into the pancreatic duct. And what would you see? What will your patient be telling you? If bile goes into the pancreatic duct, because the force of the bile, you can see one thing, gravity, and two, you know, there are always what you call sphincteric arrangements, but this sphincter is not as strong as, you know, some of the others, and so it can go. What would you expect to see? What would be the complaints your patient will be telling you about? Pancreatitis pain. Pancreatitis gives them severe pain. Pancreatitis gives them severe pain right in this region. That means you would think it's the stomach. Why would you think it's the stomach? Because the pancreas is forming the stomach bed. Behind the stomach is the pancreas. And so therefore, so pancreatitis pain is acute. Pancreatitis is very severe pain apparently. Okay? And so it can cause pancreatitis. It can go, you know, here. And so, and if there is blockage any place along here, what would be the other clinical sign that your patient may demonstrate? Jaundice. Bile can get into the bloodstream. You know, just like sugar in diabetic cases, you know, you have to test to see the amount of sugar, you know, that when its filtration has taken place in the kidneys and it has, you know, excess sugar in the blood, where is it going to be, you know, going? So, I mean, in the urine, that means it's going to go into the blood, stay in the blood. The same thing, bile is going to be seen as jaundice. That means if you have excess bile getting, you know, into the bloodstream, you may see that in the mucous membrane. That means you may see that in the eye is one place very easy you can see, the mucous membrane of the eye, and places like that. And if you are still not sure, take a sample of urine, put some, maybe a piece of, little piece of cooked potato, or a couple of grains of cooked rice or something like that, put in the urine, you will see it becomes yellow if there is, you know, excess bile there. So, but you don't do all that in your office when the patient comes to you first, but you will see, you know, the yellow tinge, that means jaundice. So that is how it happens, you know, with blockage of, you know, gallstones. Any place, you know, along here, if the bile is not going through where it should go through, okay? So these are just, wait, I'll come to your question in a minute. Big things, but just, it will stay, I don't have this on the exam, so don't worry. So these things are this big picture, big things, and then pathologists will be plugging in, you know, the information in more detail. Yeah, you have a question? there going to be any problems because pancreatic juice cannot go up here and go down here, but you know, it can go up here. But what it is pancreatic juice, how is it produced? When you look at the pancreas, the function of the pancreas, you know, when it is produced, you know, lots of it is produced, but here also there is a, a sphincter. There's also a sphincter here. This sphincter is much stronger than the pancreatic sphincter. I haven't, you know, seen that the pancreatic juice, because that's not, you know, really continually produced. Even though pancreatic juice is a lot more than, you know, what you would find coming here. But, you know, I haven't seen or heard of pancreatic juice, you know, traveling up. Okay, and so, but, it's not stopping it from going up. Just because people haven't written about it, that means they haven't seen it. That means somebody had to do some research to find out, you know. You can do that. We have a research center here. You guys can pick up on some things. It doesn't always have to be, you know, chaya or something like that, you know, and no chaya, you know, with the research. And so anything else? Anything else about the gallstone? One more thing. Now you can see the, when you have the, right along here, okay, now you've seen the relationship of this. Here, let's go here. Okay, let's go here. Now you can see when there is cancer of the head of the pancreas. See, this is the head of the pancreas, and this is the projection and ancillary process, you know, of the head projecting to the left here. But you can see cancer of the head of the pancreas, how it can also have an effect on the passage of the juice into the second part of the duodenum. See that? So the you look at the relationship to see that. Okay? And the other thing, Megan, in relation, sorry, going back to, I just thought of it, in relation to Megan's question. The other thing about the pancreatic juice is this. Many a times the pancreas has an accessory pancreatic duct for the duct of Santorini. An accessory pancreatic, a lot of times. It's not always, but for the most most of the people, we have an accessory pancreatic duct, and when the juice can't go through here, a lot of the pancreatic juice can also go into a little bit higher into the duodenum, because the duct of Santorini opens a little bit higher from, you know, where the hepatopancreatic ampulla is. Bile may have it because it doesn't connect up with the bile duct. It may be. The question is, can the bile also go back up, you know, because it is connecting up higher? It's possible. Yeah. Pardon me? Yeah, I'll go back to that. So the head of the pancreas, if it develops cancer, that means I don't know where it can be. It can be anywhere, but you know this structure has become big, or this has a huge big tumor sitting on it. That can compress, that can also, you know, have an obstruction. You know, it can cause an obstruction to the passage of bile into the second part of the duodenum. So these are things you may come across when you see patients, you know, with jaundice. You want to think of all these hepatitis, all kinds of forms of hepatitis that I'm not going to go, because I don't remember, I'm not quite comfortable with such things at this time. And so that is the gallbladder and the hepatic ducts. And let's go here. And the relations of the bile duct. Okay, good. Are you all right for me to go to the portal system? Portal systemic anastomosis? Can I go to that? Yeah? Okay. Let's go to the portal and systemic venous anastomosis and communications. You must be getting sick of listening to that, because you've heard it so many times. But this is, I'm just finishing it up now for the last time, except on exams and things like that. And so here, let's go and color it. So it's going to be very easy for you because you already know a lot about it. We are just finalizing it. So here, this is in the coloring packet. I have lots of it left. Also, some people didn't, you know, take it. And this packet has for the kidneys, for the posterior abdominal wall, liver. And so that one contains all of those. Now here, when you look at the portal, systemic venous anastomosis, okay, let's go here, blue, red, purple. I'm going to keep the IVC, the systemic, you know, venous channels are the colored ones here. So I'm going to keep that color without, I'm not going to color that one, okay? And on the other hand, when you look at, you know, the portal venous system. Now the portal venous system, what we talk about is what is coming to the liver via the portal hepatic vein. From where is it coming? It's coming from all the digestive, you know, tract, all of the digestive tract, your stomach, gallbladder, even the pancreas, and your small intestine, large intestine, and you have a diagram that is the one in there and everywhere, and so this is normal. But what is something that as a physician you need to keep in mind is this: the portal venous system and all the veins that are associated with the or part of the portal venous system, they do not have valves. They do not have valves. The IVC also doesn't have valves. So therefore, if a vein doesn't have valves, what can happen to the blood? It can flow in either direction. It can flow in either direction, you know, depending upon certain conditions, okay? So that is the case here that you're going to see. And so here you have the portal vein in purple color. I have the portal vein here. Of course, how is it formed, the portal vein? How is the portal vein formed? The superior mesenteric vein arch and the splenic vein. That's the classical and more 85 to 80 to 85% of the people, that's the case, but you can have variations, but I'm not taking the variations here now. Okay, so here you have all this digestive juice filled, that means all the nutrients and everything, all the goodies that we have eaten for breakfast and then last dinner, and everything is coming now to the liver. Now, when it comes to the liver, you know the liver has, you know, the system here, as you look at it here, the portal hepatic vein, and here, as it comes, what does the portal vein do when it comes into the liver? What does it do? Breaks out into sinusoids. So that's what you're seeing here. You can see it is breaking out into sinusoids here, okay? Alright, in relation to this sinusoids here, what happens to the hepatic artery? What happens to the hepatic artery? What does it do? Hepatic artery comes, right? The hepatic artery comes and branches into right and left, you know, hepatic arteries. And what happens to the branches of the hepatic artery here? It is also, look at it here. Here's the hepatic artery coming in, and so you can see it is branching, and there you can see the capillary, the anastomosis is taking place where the sinusoids are. So the arterial end is again right here. Here is the arterial end. That means the arteries, the hepatic artery is coming here. How much blood is brought to the hepatic, brought to the liver by the hepatic artery? About 20 to 25%. About 20 to 25% of the blood is brought. So the arterial blood to the liver is brought by the hepatic artery. Only the hepatic artery. Okay? And so it is here and the sinusoids are here. From the sinusoids, look at it here. From the sinusoids here, you have small veins developing and forming your what? What is being formed here? Hepatic veins. Two or sometimes even three. Two or three. This is why we say portal hepatic system, that we say is because this is not the usual, you know, way. There is no sinusoids in the other places, you know, when you look at it, you know, the arterial end and the venous end. But here you have, you know, the portal system. Which other place in the body does have tying the big thing in, you know, with the entire body system? I'm not jumping around. So which other place in the body would you find the portal type of, you know, anastomosis? That is the anastomosis in the abdomen. Get out of the abdomen, look in the human body. In the brain where you have the, what do you call the, pituitary, infundibulum, at the infundibulum of the pituitary, when you do endocrinology, you will see there's also the portal system there. The anastomosis, you know, the sinusoids and the portal system is also found at the infundibulum of the pituitary, so the pituitary gland. And so here in the liver, this is why, to differentiate it in why we say the portal hepatic venous system. The other is the pituitary, you see, portal hepatic venous system. And so here, of course, you know, it goes into the inferior vena cava, and so that is the usual. Now, imagine if there is a blockage to the portal vein, as the portal vein is coming into the liver, as it is trying to deliver all the goodies to the liver. And so that means you can have a blockage here. And what can happen? Where is that blockage where you expect to see? So here, as you expect to see here. So where is the blockage and what type of blockage? And so where can be the blockage? What can be the common causes of blockage or portal vein not being able to deliver the blood, you know, to the liver? So here, what is this area here? The porta hepatis. And so if there is any blockage, what can be the blockage? What do you think? Tumor can be one, and the other is fibrotic changes at the porta hepatis. Fibrotic changes around the porta hepatis here, and the fibrotic changes can also be spreading right into the liver tissue. Instead of your hepatocytes in beautiful array, you know, hepatocytes on both sides, and then you have all kinds of things, you can have fibrotic changes taking place in what conditions? Cirrhosis of the liver. That can be from alcoholic conditions, from certain hepatitis. It's not always alcoholism. Hepatitis, certain type of hepatitis can give you cirrhosis of the liver. Alcoholism can give you cirrhosis of the liver. And tumors and anything that will block the blood flow into the liver bed can have a backflow of blood. And so what will happen to the blood pressure, the pressure of blood in the liver bed? Increased. That is what you call portal hypertension. So in portal hypertension, then you can have backflow of blood. When backflow of blood takes place, remember, these veins have no valves. So construction blockage on I-5 for a long, you know, distance. You're going to be looking for marginal, roads and places to get here, especially tomorrow. Okay, and so that's what the blood is doing here. So it is going to be going back up, and here you can see this is the umbilicus right here, and so this is the para-umbilical veins. That means this is, you know, in the quadriform ligament, para-umbilical veins, and there is venous connection. You can see the veins going right, you know, to the area around the umbilicus. As a physician, what you will see, you don't see all these changes on the inside, and what you will see is like what is called the small veins around the umbilicus will be enlarged, and that is what will be called the medusa head. So when there is, you know, so I'm doing now the around the umbilicus on this diagram. You know, it is here. Here is the para umbilical veins in the falciform ligament right here. And so here they have come. And here is the umbilicus right here. And around the umbilicus, when they come, there are small veins around the umbilicus. What are those small veins around the umbilicus called? What are they called? Here, now on the anterior abdominal wall, around the umbilicus, we have small veins here. These are superficial epigastric. Superficial epigastric veins, okay? So the superficial epigastric veins on the anterior abdominal wall around the umbilicus enlarges like that of little serpents. So the Greek anatomists long time ago, they thought it looks like the little serpents on their goddess, Medusa. So that's why it's called the Medusa head. Medusa head. That means, you know, the crown on the goddess Medusa. Caput Medusae, they called it in Greek language. So this is something like that, and you can make it like the serpent here, okay? So Medusa head or caput Medusae. Caput Medusae. So that is around the umbilicus when the superficial epigastric veins are enlarged, that have become varicosed, and it is around the umbilicus, and so it looks like caput medusae to them. It, you know, looked like it, so they call it caput medusae. It's still in the literature, in your textbook, page 306, 308, you know, will show, there's a small diagram, you know, and it will show you. And so that is, now you have seen why, if you have a patient that's coming. Also, page 108 or something like that, fifth edition, has a black and white picture that shows the entire anterior abdominal wall. You can see some enlarged, you know, veins there. So that is caput medusae, and which veins are connecting with others here. So here you have seen the para-umbilical veins coming in the falciform ligament, and so here you can see that it has, you know, connection, physical connection, communication with the superficial epigastric veins, and, you know, with increased, you know, portal hypertension, you can have that. That's one place. And now blood is still looking, and when it looks in the other place that it goes to is, we have already talked about, that it goes to the left gastric vein. Through there, it goes to the lower esophageal veins, and we have seen that it can develop. What can the lower esophageal veins, what do they develop? Yeah, esophageal varices. So I don't have to go over there. You already know about the esophageal varices. And that's two places now. Okay? And then three, also we have talked about. The anastomosis. result only from portal hypertension. Hemorrhoids can result from other conditions also. Just hemorrhoids alone can develop from other conditions, especially, you know, prolonged periods of pressure. If you exert prolonged periods of pressure, and that can, you know, onto the rectal veins, then that can also develop hemorrhoids, okay? So this is three places here now. And the fourth place is at the back of the colon. At the back of the colon, so here, these are the colic veins here, as you look at it here. The colic veins here, you can see that is, you know, right here, the colic veins. Okay, now, the colic veins, as you see, the colon is sitting there. These colic veins anastomose with the lumbar, ascending lumbar veins. So here is the systemic anastomosis, lumbar veins. Here we have four or five lumbar veins right sitting on the posterior abdominal wall, you know, right here going into the IBC. Now these lumbar veins also ascend like that, ascending lumbar veins. Do you remember anything about the ascending lumbar veins? Ah, ascites. Ascites, exactly, ascites. Okay, and so here, so now you can see how the ascending lumbar veins can give rise to part of the ascites because it's on both sides. Now these branch tributaries, these ascending lumbar veins and these regular lumbar veins here, so here these ones can, and they do have communication with the colic veins on both sides. There again, that's another place here you have anastomosis. At the back of the colon, on both sides, at the back of the colon, colic veins anastomose with the lumbar veins. The lumbar veins. As you look at your textbook, 306 page, 306 has a good diagram, better than this diagram. That shows the lumbar veins as you, okay, let me see, okay, ah, this one here. This one here shows you some lumbar veins. Not that one, this one. Okay, here, you can see some of the, some of the lumbar veins. You can see some of the ascending lumbar veins, right, even from the sacral region. See, this is in the sacral region here, but you can see, this is like that. You have it also right here from both sides, it's going like that. And the fifth place, you know, that you have, you know, this, what is called, you have is the what that you, we have already looked at, the fifth place. I mentioned it, but I didn't go over it. You remember? The bare area of the liver. The bare area of the liver. So the fifth place is the bare area of the liver. Okay? With the bare area of the liver, the veins and the bare area of the liver belongs to the portal. The portal, you know, venous system. And when that is the bare area, the liver is anastomosing with phrenic veins. Phrenic veins, okay? Bare area of the liver with phrenic veins. Bare area veins with phrenic veins. The phrenic veins, that means the veins that belong to the diaphragm, belongs to the systemic venous channels. So that's the other place. These are about five places in the abdomen, where you have portal and systemic venous anastomosis. For whatever reasons, the anastomosis is there. SES, anastomosis plural, is there. But when you see varicosities of these veins, is when there is portal hypertension. Okay? photon Venus and systemic Venus anastomosis, normally, what is the function? Or abnormally, any time, what's the function of it? What would you say is the function? Collateral venous drainage. Collateral venous drainage for the blood, you know, to get back into the colic production, yeah. For the blood to get back into the IVC, into the inferior vena cava. It can be a tumor, you know, someplace in the abdomen. So it can get back into the IVC, and once it gets back into the IVC, the blood can then get to the right atrium. To the right atrium via the IVC, because you know that is where the IVC is going. And so that is what is, you know, happening with the portal venous, you know, and the systemic venous anastomosis. That is the final time I'm going to be discussing the varicose veins, the varicosities, and the portal venous anastomosis. Any questions? You need to know these things, not just for the exams. In your clinical practice, these things are going to really, really make you very good clinicians, very good diagnosticians. When you see medusa head, or when you see hemorrhoids, or when you see any of those things, when you can tie it together, when you can figure out. Okay, so that is the portal systemic venous communications. I'm done with that. And so then we have the pancreas. The other thing on the outline is the pancreas. And as pancreas is one of the, what would be your definition of the pancreas? What would you say is the pancreas capable of doing? What is it? It's an exocrine head and an endocrine. It's an exocrine and an endocrine gland, and it forms the bed of the stomach bed. That means it's immediately behind, posterior, you know, to the stomach. Perineal relations, what would you say it is? Perineal relations, what would you say? It is retro, all of it? Except for a little part of the tail. The tail that sticks up and is in contact with the spleen. When you have it like that, you can see that a tiny part that is sticking up here like that. So the tiny part that comes up there, not the rest of it. The rest of it is all retroperitoneal, and head, neck, body, tail, the parts. Now, pancreatic ducts. We have gone over the pancreatic ducts. There's the main pancreatic duct, and there is also, you know, you have the, what is called the accessory pancreatic duct, and they open, you know, separately, many times they open separately, you know, into the duodenum. And if somebody asks you for specific area of the hepatopancreatic ampulla entering the small intestine, I'm not just asking for duodenum. You know, I'm asking for the middle of the second part of the duodenum. The middle of the second part of the duodenum is what is specific. Duodenum is not specific enough. Duodenum has ascending, descending, you know, first part, all kinds of parts, pancreatic ducts, and blood supply. Where is the blood supply coming from for the pancreas? Pancreas blood supply, where is it coming from? It is coming from your celiac trunk, splenic. It gets lots from splenic. It also gets some branches from the superior mesenteric, because it is, you know, sitting there. And let me see. That's about the pancreas. Because, you know, it is, there's a lot more in endocrinology and places, you know, for gross anatomy. Where is it located? What is it doing? It's an exocrine and an endocrine gland. So that is, you know, roughly speaking, digestive juices is producing. What? move on? Okay, and let me see the spleen. The spleen is the other structure that we have to look at today. As you look at the spleen, again, what pectoral relations, where is it located? What are the important relationships of the spleen? Of the spleen, intraperitoneal, retroperitoneal, what is it? It is intraperitoneal. An important relationship of clinically important relationship of the spleen, its relationship to the ribs. The ribs, as you look at it here, you can, this one, but from, it's not showing the ribs here, but when you look at where it is sitting, which ribs will it be? Lateral relation of the spleen, of the spleen here. What number of ribs do you think it will be? Lateral relation of the spleen will be what numbers? 9, 10, 11. 9, 10, 11 is important because this is lateral. This is side here. This side can get hit. This side can get hit. And spleen is a soft, tissue. And where does it belong, the spleen, to which system? The lymphatic, the largest lymphatic organ. The largest lymphatic organ or the largest lymphatic viscera. Lymphatic structure is the spleen, and it has no duct. It has no duct. As you look at the spleen here, it has no duct, and you can see it. You can cut open. What it has is that it has white pulp. Do you remember? You may remember from histology, white pulp, red pulp. Let's go there for a second. White pulp, red pulp, all this there. From where is the blood supply coming for the spleen? From where is the blood supply coming? Splenic artery, which is from the celiac trunk. This is from the celiac trunk. The huge, big splenic artery you have already seen. So as the splenic artery comes, this is clinically important for you to know. So here, the splenic artery comes in and divides and goes, to various segments. That means, to your white pulp and your red pulp and all these areas here. Now, here, just like some other places that we talked about, and so here, these arteries, they don't have anastomosis, at small arterial level. The anastomosis that exists in these segments, little segments of the spleen, is only at the capillary level. So what would you call these arteries that are just terminating in little segments of the spleen? End arteries. So that is one thing about the spleen and its supply that you need to keep in mind, because if there's a blockage, because what does the spleen do? What does it do? What is the function of the spleen? It takes a lot of blood in and it filters the breakdown products of RBC, and it also produces some your lymphocytes and some antibodies. It produces, because it's a lymphatic organ, produces all that. And so that's why it has the two pulps, white pulp, red pulp, all this. And so, but as a clinician, you may want to think, and that if these are end arteries, and so if there is a blockage to one of these arteries or to this one, what can happen to that little segment of the spleen? Yeah, it is going to die. So anytime, anywhere you have end arteries, that is why I point out, or other people point out, the end arteries. Remember what was one of the muscles in the calf? Yes. So very similar to that, you have end arteries in the retina, you have end arteries here, in the spleen. There are very few places where you have end arteries, okay? And and that means the anastomosis is only at the capillary level and not at, you know, higher level, as you have seen in other places. You've seen anastomosis around the knee, and you've seen anastomosis around the scapula, extensive anastomosis, you know, and you, so the, but that type of anastomosis doesn't exist. Arterial anastomosis doesn't exist. So these little segments, you know, can be, you know, damaged. And let me see, relation surfaces and parts. The other thing is, if the spleen is enlarged, splenomegaly, enlarged splenomegaly, that means if the spleen is enlarged in size, you call that splenomegaly. Okay, when that happens in living anatomy, you will be able to palpate these little notches, this one, these notches, you know, that are on the superior border, that will be, you'll be able to palpate it, you know, about here, you'll be able to palpate it, okay? Anterior and medial, you know, here, you will be able to palpate it. Otherwise, you will not be palpating it. Unless it is enlarged, you will not be able, you should not be able to palpate it, you know, the superior border, you know, right here. And other than that, of course, you know, you know it's the extensive blood supply because of its function. You know, and let me see where the outline is right here. Surfaces, parts, blood supply. Blood supply, you know, is important, and its relationships are important. That means to the body wall. Its relationship to the body wall is important, and of course, you know, it is, you know, it has attachment to the stomach by your, you know, peritoneal, you know, ligaments. Now, that's about, you know, let me see, anything else about the spleen I wanted to, you know, tell you. Well, because it's an organ, it has a hilum. It has a hilum, and any organ that has a hilum, what's happening at the hilum? But, you know, structures enter and structures leave, okay? And what else? Regeneration. This tissue can regenerate, you know, this can. Injury to damage, injury or damage, you know, like in a car accident or in anything like that, you know, traumatic incident, a lot of blood can immediately, you know, rush into that, you know, into the region, because the splenic artery is very large. You can lose a lot of blood. So you want to be aware of that, because the splenic artery is, you know, so very, you know, large. And splenomegaly enlarged, and its location. Where in the body would you say the spleen is located? Where is it located? Left hypochondriac region. Left hypochondriac region. That's about what I think a physician needs to know. It's in the left. You don't want to look for the spleen on a living anatomy exam on the right side. You want to look for the spleen on the left side, in the left, you know, hypochondrium. And that's about what I, you know, like you guys as physicians to know about. The pancreas, the spleen, and what do you call the the porta cavae anastomosis. And so I'm done with these things. And do you have any questions on the spleen, the pancreas, the porta cavae anastomosis? Anything? Yes, Katie. Yes, the exam will include through today. That means today means right from right up to now only. Not what I'm going to do after the break. And so I have the kidneys, the ureter, kidneys and the ureter, suprarenals. That takes me only about half an hour. Then, after that, any questions you have, I can entertain your questions on the exams, because there's an hour, a good hour, and kidneys, because you're already ahead of me in this section. You know, because you've already gone up to the posterior abdominal wall. I still have to do the kidneys and the step and still come and catch up. And some of you are bound to write and say, Dr. Thomas and Ben Lau do not coordinate, and, you know, we are ahead in this section. and some people don't like it, so I just don't want that. I want to, as much as possible, catch up. Anyway, that's it. Yeah, you had a question? I'm sorry. The format of the exam is nothing. It's the same as you've taken in the first quarter. There will be fill in the blanks, short answers. I may give a diagram, you know, and, you know, so, and what else? Multiple choice. I have a total of 80 questions, and two of them are what you call bonus questions. But the total 80, I give these because number one, you have a lot of questions, so you can, you know, really you have the freedom of, you know, if you do some. The other is that there are lots of reading there. You know, it's like, you know, the gallbladder, you know, each of the following is good for the gallbladder, or the gallbladder tends to do all of the following except, you know, which. So that's just one line, two lines reading, and then you can just, you know, look at the choices. And again, even the choices, I'll, you know, limit it to as just fewer words as possible, so that you're not spending too much time. And so that is, you know, so the questions, I mean, that's the exam. The same format as we did before. Okay, you guys, let's take a break, and I will, first half an hour, I will do the kidney, and suprarenal, and the ureter, no time, and then we get the question. Pardon me?